Guys, Roland here. And I was wondering if you've ever had this feeling or doubt about whether anything that you do really ends, right? It seems to me that every end is really just another beginning, another opportunity to express oneself creatively. And if you've wondered that, then this would be a great podcast to listen. I got an awesome guest, and we'll talk about this next. Welcome to Conversations with Roland, where the goal of this show is to learn life secrets through diverse experiences. I am your host, Roland Achenjang. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Conversations with Roland. As always, I am super excited to record these conversations, and today is no different. Today, we will be talking about whether or not the destination is really the end for what we're trying to achieve. And with me is an amazing guest. He's an artiste, musician, if you will. He's a singer, songwriter, producer. Every time I see him, for some reason, I think of the Beatles. This is true, and I've let him know. He plays all sorts of musical instruments. It seems like I blink and he has a new song or a new album out. This guy doesn't stop. He has over 9 albums released. It's nuts, and I love it. And with all the work he's doing, he's really embodying our topic of conversation today, right? That the destination is not the end, really. And so with all my heart, I am happy to welcome my friend with a beautiful accent all the way from across the pond in London, Roger Heathers, to Conversations with Roland. Roger, welcome. How are you, my friend?
Oh, thank you, Roland. That is the nicest introduction to anything anyone's ever given me. I'm absolutely beaming over here. I'm good. I'm good. I'm really happy to be on the show. Long time listener, first time caller, as they say. So,
no, I love it. I'm glad you're here too, Roger. You're a great man. I absolutely appreciate your creativity and so much more. And it's funny how we connected and became friends, and then now, I thought it'd be great to have you on the show. You thought the same, and here we are. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I feel like we hit it off and kind of realized we have more things in common than we thought. We kind of discovered, oh, we both like meditating. Oh, we both like music. Oh, we both like the creative process and all that sort of stuff. So absolutely, it's great to talk to you, man.
Indeed. So this would be great because I'm going to be learning a lot about you here during this conversation, and so with the audience, right? So we'll start by just asking, who is Roger Heathers, right? Other than what I just mentioned, this great musician, where are you currently? What was life growing up like for you, et cetera? Just paint a little picture of how you ended up here today.
Okay, well, so I guess I'd categorize myself most as somebody who makes music, and I spend a lot of time making music, which kind of started, I guess, when I was a teenager, or, sort of like a 12, 13 years old. And a lot of people in the family, my mom and my dad and my stepdad, they were all kind of musical in their own ways, And so there were always guitars around the house and record collections and all this kind of thing, and quite a diverse, scape of music around. And so I picked up the guitar, and I started just playing the guitar, started playing the piano a little bit, and then eventually started singing very badly, because when people start to sing, you sing very badly at first. And then eventually I kind of found that I knew I kind of liked being creative, like playing the guitar, learning something. But then I realized more than learning other people's music, what I love to do is come up with something completely fresh, completely original. And I found that the canvas that I was able to do that best on was recording. So my parents got me a tape recorder when I was like about 13 or 14, and I just started to fill up tapes. Like I had like shoe boxes of tapes, like just cassette, all these things. And I just realized that this is something I would come home after school and just dive into, and I would either record covers or write original stuff. And so I just got into it that way. And, and then on top of that was added artwork and mixing and mastering, and kind of this thing that started with playing the guitar and singing turned into recording artwork, and it just expands and expands and expands. So
that's awesome. So it sounds like you came from a family of musicians. You said your parents were musicians?
Yeah, that's right. So my dad has always played guitar, and he has a really unique style of playing, a lot of acoustic guitar, you know. So like my mom isn't a musician, and she wouldn't, if I said that, she'd go, oh, I'm not a musician, but she sings so well. And what I always remember when I was a kid, which had a huge impact on me, was she would always have the radio on, or in the car she'd have CDs on and stuff like that, the Beatles, the Beach Boys, whoever it was, and she would sing harmony along to these albums and these songs. And I remember thinking, oh, everyone's parents must do that. And then at a certain point in school, I realized not everyone's parents sing harmony along to the Beatles. So I was like, yeah, I've got a pretty special mother here. And, you know, my stepdad was a very proficient musician. And yeah, so, you know, I had a few people around me who I was just like, yeah, this is cool. I like this, you know.
Yeah. Now, did your dad ever record professionally? Did he release any music?
My dad recorded like one studio track on a compilation once, but my stepdad recorded a bunch of sort of like self-released albums. So I guess that's kind of where I got the bug.
Okay. No, that's awesome. And then, you know, you kind of touched on this already a little bit, but you said at 13, 14, you would have this tape recorder on which you would record and fill up, you know, a bunch of cassettes. And I was going to ask, at 13 or 14, what kind of music were you writing at that time already? Like, what topics were you writing about on top of the what you said were, you were doing covers. You were doing covers and writing your own stuff. So what were you writing about at that time?
That's a really interesting question, because I wasn't much of a lyricist at that time. I mean, if you imagine like the, you know, the handwritten poems of your typical 14-year-old, they aren't going to be so deep or interesting in that sense. But I just admired people who made records and songs for the chords they were using at that time, for the chords they were using, the type of production they were using, that sort of thing. So it was more kind of like trying to learn the craft of how people made records, as opposed to like actually expressing anything verbal at that time. I was still writing lyrics, but they were just kind of like to fill a gap. So at that stage, it was really listening to a whole bunch of different stuff. Like I say, there was some Beatles in there and Queen and all that sort of thing. You know, I think the thing is also having parents who liked such good music, you kind of want to rebel against what your parents listened to, you know what I mean? So because they liked the best possible music I could possibly think of, I started getting into, you know, Public Enemy and stuff like this that they didn't really like, just so I could have my own thing.
Yeah.
Lyrically, I don't know. When I listen back to those old recordings, I just kind of cringe, because they're not really about anything. There's no real substance to them.
No, that's good. I was really asking, as out of curiosity, if you had already started to have maybe certain subjects that meant a lot to you that you were writing about, or if it was just, you know, stuff. And with me, I remember writing poems as a, you know, a 14, 15-year-old kid in high school. And the poems were a lot about just puppy love, right? And they were very much influenced by Shakespeare and stuff. And, you know, you try to get them to rhyme at the end. Very, very simple, really elementary rhymes with, if I could get the words at the end to rhyme, the substance really didn't have to mean anything. But it was always heartbreak, all right? I went to an all-boys boarding school, and that for 3 years, and that really made me, it put me in a place where it was tough to interact with girls when I went to a co-ed school, right? Because you go through like 12, 13, 14. And when I was 15, 16, all the way up to 18, even a little bit after that, I had this challenge to interact with girls.
Sure.
And so I would express myself. Yeah. My poems were usually how I was being rejected by, by all these girls that I had crushes on and stuff like that. But so, you know, you talked about chords, the chords you were using or the chords you were listening to was what really interested you or picked your interest in the chords of the musicians in the music that you were listening to. And so I kind of wanted to ask, did you get any school music training, or is this stuff you just picked up on your own?
I mean, I did study music in school, and I had a handful of instrumental lessons from tutors, but like 90% of it was self-taught.
Oh, really?
Just from, it kind of came from like a love of listening to records more than like a kind of academic approach, if that makes sense. Like, it's just, I love how these records sound that I'm listening to. How do I do that? You know, just a big question about how do they do that? How does, you know, how do people get their chords to sound that good? How do people get their productions to sound that good? It was just a constant, and it's still the same today. It's still just this constant pursuit of how do you do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that. And so I got to ask you, when you, even today, are listening to music, are you listening to the, as a musician, are you listening to the entire package as far as the instruments, how they're layered, plus how the vocals are layered on top of them, and then the whole story? Are you listening for all of that? Or are you picking up more on the chord progression, the instruments, and then maybe the vocals second, then the story? Or are you just listening to just the lyrics?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think it kind of depends like where you are in yourself at the given moment.
Okay.
So like if I'm in a kind of an intellectual mode, you know, I think I'll kind of quite often be listening to the chords and how the drums are engineered, how they might have mic'd up the drums and that sort of thing. So from a very technical standpoint, but you know, if I'm, as we all do, if I'm feeling certain strong emotions and I'm in my emotional place, you know, in myself, I'll be listening to the lyrics and kind of like, you know, getting into those and being, oh my God, I can relate to that. And, you know, to do with my own relationships and my own relationship with myself and the world. So I can be very emotional about it. And then at other times, you know, you're just so physically into the music, you know, you're just dancing. So there's no like technical, how did they make the drums? You know, it's like, you're just getting into it. You're just physically there. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that answer. And part of the reason I'm asking too is because I remember back in college, I'd be hanging out with my friends and we would be listening to, say, rap music, for instance, right? And at this time, I had really gotten to lyric writing, right? Trying to be more creative with my metaphors, my rhymes, etc., and puns. But my friends, they could care less about the lyrics. They were just listening to the music. And for some reason, that didn't sit well with me. And I remember I was driving with my friend once and we were listening to a song by Lil Wayne. And he didn't know any of what he was saying. And I was like, dude, are you listening to the words? He was, nah, I don't care about the words. I'm just listening to the music. I just want to dance. And I thought, that's such a disservice to the artist. You're not even listening to how much creativity is in his word choices and the way he places them and delivers them. And again, I appreciate that part of me really focusing on the lyrics was because as far as being an instrumentalist or being able to create instruments that you would lay your vocals over, I'm just worthless. So I usually just say, okay, let me hear the lyrics, because I know I only write lyrics. I try to make music, but I couldn't play anything, can't layer, and I just thought, I'll get the instrumentals and then try to match it with a story and vocals and some interesting lyrics there. But what you said is great. Depending on where you are going to listen to either the music or the instruments. And this is true for me today too, especially if I listen to music where I don't understand the language. Mm. At that point, if I listen to something from, say, Nigeria, for instance, usually I don't understand the language. I can kind of pick up the story based on if it's a music video. But more, I like the instrumental, so it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And something that your listeners might not know is that you, Roland, are a very proficient lyricist. And, you know, you really know your stuff and your wordplay is really good. But it is interesting because I think particularly with rhythm or hip-hop based music, you quite often find, don't you, like a duo will work together. Like one person is very proficient with their lyrics and then their partner musically is very proficient with creating instrumentals, creating chord sequences and drum loops and that sort of thing. The people who can create both to a high standard are quite a rarity, I've found.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like people have like, it's almost like they're kind of like inherently born with like specific, you know, proficiencies or intelligences towards a certain thing. It's like some people are like very intelligent athletically. Some people can do gymnastics you and I could never dream of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to be that's the way they are, which I think is quite interesting.
It is. It's part of the uniqueness that we each express as unique expressions of consciousness. Yeah, we come in and we say, oh, this particular skill set or this particular way of experiencing life on Earth, I want to take it to a level that nobody else has ever seen, right? Mm. Which is part of the creative process. And it's a good segue to ask you, actually, before we get to that, so growing up, we've gotten kind of a good sense of what that was like for you, right? You had some tutoring into musical instruments. A lot of it was self-taught. Your family was musicians. Your mom was a musician who really wasn't a musician. Right?
Yeah.
Your stepdad had some self-released albums. Your dad was on a compilation. And then siblings. Did you have any siblings?
Yeah. So I've got two sisters, two brothers.
Ah, neat. I have two brothers and two sisters as well. And yeah, that's another commonality that we have that I wasn't even aware of.
Hey.
And where do you sit in relation, so age-wise?
So my youngest brother is 12. My youngest sister is 20. I'm 28. My sister older than me is 29. And then my older brother is 32 on Monday. It took okay. some thought, but I think I got everybody.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to your older brother on Monday. Neat. Well, whenever you're listening to this, it would have already passed.
So. That's very true, actually. Yeah. But it happens every year. So, you know, hopefully he'll be around for a good many birthdays.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be September 14th. Neat. No, that's neat. Yeah. And I sit with my family. I'm the oldest. And everyone comes after me. I got, 34? And my sister Joyce is 30, and Nadine. We got Gilmore and Neven. Neven's the youngest, about 22. Yeah, he's 22 years old now, so.
So we got like a similar gap between us and our younger brothers, too.
Yeah, mine's 12 years. Yeah. Oh, that's neat. Well, thanks for sharing, my friend. Let's ask you this, your creative process, right? I mean, seriously, I love, you're on Instagram and Facebook, and I'll have links to your Instagram page in the notes section of this podcast and your website as well, rogerheathers.com. But every time I turn around, you got new music coming out. And then if I do like a 360, it's like a full album coming out. You don't stop. Seriously. And you're so talented. I just love it. And so to me, what's your creative process? Like where does this come from? How do you sit up and say, oh, I want to write a song. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got a song out.
Well, it's kind of got to a point where it's like pretty methodical at this point. But I feel like one thing I've come to a point where I'm quite pleased with is like, it's kind of methodical, but at the same time, it's still as creative as it could be. So I do my own podcast called The Weekly Song Podcast, where me and a friend will write a song from scratch, and we'll do it in like a block of 7 or 8 weeks. And we'll just go every week, we'll have a new song. And it's just like if you compare it to like an artist, like just a very rough sketch, you know, just like a picture and that's it. And you can leave it or you can develop it. And you just have to have it done in a week. So there's that challenge. So if you think about that, you know, in 2 months, I've got 8 new songs, and not all of them are going to be good. But that's kind of the thing with creativity in general, is like, and I think it stops a lot of people beginning, is you think like, oh, everything I do has got to be like the highest quality. And it's like, actually, even if 1 out of 5 songs or 1 out of 5 drawings or whatever you do is really good, there's still one more than you would have had if you did nothing. So anyway, I'll do my block of 7 or 8 songs, and then I'll choose my favorite demos from those, and they'll just be like acoustic scratch songs. But I'll take my favorites, and then I'll send them to a drummer, for example, and then I'll get some drums back. And the internet makes this so much more streamlined. You know, you just kind of send it, and then beep, it comes back. And then I just kind of layer up, and I record some bass on top of the drums I just got back, and some guitars and some keyboards and some vocals. And then because I have some audio engineering experience, I can then mix and master it. So if I really try at it, my process of writing a song to having a fully produced song can happen in a week, which means that every single week I can have a new song. Now, the songs will obviously differ from piece to piece because, you know, if I write a country song one week and I'll write a much more sort of like upbeat, like glam rock type of thing, they'll kind of go into different categories or different piles. And so if I suddenly realize, oh, I seem to have a crop of, you know, 8 or 10 acoustic ballads, I'll go, that's an album, you know? And along the way, I'll be sharing the process. So it might even look like I'm doing more than I am sometimes, because I don't focus so much on the releases these days, but just on the fact that I like making music. So if I'm constantly making something, then I usually have something to share, and I just kind of put out what I'm proud of. And then if, like I say, when it piles up into a project-sized thing, I just commission some artwork and bam, it's out there. So it's kind of like a bit of a factory at the moment.
It sounds like it. But wait a minute, this is something I didn't know about you. So there was someone you work with, and I don't think you mentioned his name, part of your podcast, the Weekly Song podcast, where you've agreed that every week for like an 8-week session, you try to come up with a new song by the end of that week.
That's right. Yeah, I think I kind of wasn't clear about the sort of format of the show, but every week we'll come up with a song each. So like I'll come up with my own song and he'll come up with his own song. And the podcast exists as like a forum so we can discuss how songwriting works. And it's kind of not so much for us, but like so that other songwriters who are new to the craft can learn how to put chords together, you know, especially with lyrics. I was talking about lyrics before, you know, when you first start writing lyrics, as you know, with your poems, there's a question of like, how do you do this? You know, I've never written down a set of words before. So I think the podcast mm-hmm. helps people to structure that for themselves. And yeah, you know, my friend Declan Kitchener is his name, and he's a great musician and songwriter in his own right. He's very into the songwriting craft, just like I am. And he and I have a kinship of just like nerding out over chords and production and how lyrics work and that sort of thing. So it just seemed very natural to make it into a podcast where we talk about that, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. I'll certainly put links to that podcast here. And hopefully while you're listening to this, catch it out, especially if you're interested in writing lyrics. I think that'll be great for sure. So you guys, you get together every week, you write a song, and then you come up and you talk about this. And then after, you know, an 8-week or so period, you have maybe 8 songs. Now, you said these are really crude, right? They're not polished and finished at all. And it's from these 8 songs that usually you can pick maybe a couple of them that end up in an album.
That's true. But I must admit, I've been, and I don't know why this is, but this year has been very fruitful as far as if I write 8 songs, usually one of them I won't end up using, but because they're in different styles, I'll go, okay, these 3 seem to fit in this acoustic project and these 4 seem to fit over here in a different way. So I've been able to like produce them up pretty quickly, I think, which again, I'm not quite sure why, maybe just the songwriting gods are smiling down on me or something. But yeah, you know, it's a good way to do it. Because if it starts crude, I heard this thing recently, somebody said, don't like your demos too much. Like, don't be so keen on your demos. Because if you try to make your demo, which, you know, for people who don't know the musical jargon, it's just like the sketch before you do the full production. So you have the very initial idea of, like, I think it's generally this sort of shape of a song. And then you have the full thing, which you release on an album or as a single or something. If you like the demo too much, then you kind of spent all of your energy on that one, mm-hmm. so that when you try to do it properly, you go, either you don't care about it anymore because you've already used your energy, or you try and do it and you can't replicate the actual energy you captured in the first one. So you've got to kind of like draw like a very rough, sketchy thing, go, I kind of like that, leave it for a week or something, come back to it, and then you go, right, okay, now let's fill in some gaps, draw with some bolder lines, and actually try and add something creative to it again, but in a different sense, because there's a different creativity that's needed for it. First of all, writing a song on an acoustic guitar, and then a second kind of creativity is needed for how am I going to arrange this? It's kind of a different part of the brain that's actually used for that.
No kidding. And thanks for the explanation about demo. I was actually going to ask that too. But I like the idea of doing a sketch, living it for a while, then coming back. Right? In writing my book, that was kind of the same process. I wrote the entire first draft of the book. It was 75 pages in one weekend. And I remember I sent it to my family and my sister read it and she goes, Roland, you got something here, but seriously, your writing is shit. I thought, Oh,
nice.
Well, thank you. I'm not a writer. I'm a pharmacist. I've never written a book. So, of course, it's going to be shit. But yeah, it took, I thought, you know, naively, honestly, I thought that I would write this book at the end of, it was the first weekend of September in 2018, right, when I wrote the entire draft. And I thought I could have it all published and ready to go by December of that same year. And I thought it would be an amazing Christmas gift for everybody. I was like, whoa, I'm going to save everybody's emotional pain this year and going forward. But no, it took a whole year to perfect it and finally release. And so the whole idea that you talk about doing a sketch, just simple rough sketch, so that your energy is really not super wasted, or you kind of, you are modulating how much of it you're expensing to come back later on and then bold out the lines and make that sketch look even prettier, right? I think that's really good advice for the creative process. Then the other thing you kind of said is this year, it seems like you're really fruitful with your music. And I have to say, I haven't known you very long, but seeing what you're doing this year, this is all I know about you. So naively, I'm thinking this guy has always been creative like that, but I know it's not the case. It's a culmination of all the backlog of all the work that you've been doing that now these creative juices are just flowing. And a lot of it, I believe too, is because of the passion you have for music, right? When you're passionate about something, then right, the creative process makes it easier. I don't know what you think about that.
I think that's true. I think the best way to learn anything creative is through excitement. You know, if you go, I remember when I was like 18, I got really into scratching records. You know, like cutting records and getting scratches from that, which I'd never been into before. Because you know, I've been playing piano and guitar and bass and stuff and then all of a sudden I got into DJ Premiere and all these different people who could really, really scratch well. And I was like, how do people do that? And there was just this excitement of like, you know, okay, I'm going to buy the cheapest decks I can buy and just learn how to do it. And the reason I say that is because it's the same with anything musical, where you have to start from that place of excitement. And I think the only way to overcome the struggle of like, I want to be creative, but God, you know, how could I be creative? Because I think that's the feeling that I had, and everybody has when they first start painting or drawing or making music or anything or writing. And the way to overcome that self-doubt, I think, is like, I'm so excited by this. This is going to be so much fun. And like, and by it being so much fun, you completely negate the feeling of I'm not good enough, or, oh, this is going to come out shit. This is going to sound or look awful, you know? So it's just a case of excitement. But yeah, as far as like, this year and it kind of being so fruitful, my creative process, I think it's just a case of making time, falling back in love with music in a big way. Because for the past couple of years before that, I was making music, but there wasn't like this spark of like, I know why I'm doing this. There's a real like reason I'm doing this. And I think this is something you and I have spoken about before, and I'd like to speak to you about it as well today. Is why are we creative? And I think if you can explore that question for yourself, not academically, but in yourself, why am I creative? Why do I enjoy doing this? Then you realize that there are certain moments in the creative process where you're able to find something, find gold, you know, strike gold and go, okay, this is good. And not in the sense of like, people are going to like this. I think that's a byproduct, but in the sense of, I am enjoying this so much. And when you're in that place of I am enjoying this so much, you come up with these great ideas. And that's the great thing with creativity, is you kind of have to bypass the ego. Because if your ego is like, I'm coming up with great ideas here and people are going to think I'm brilliant, you know, you're not going to come up with any good ideas.
Yeah.
Whereas if your attitude is, I love doing this, there seems to be something here. And also the ideas don't even seem to come from up here in the head. They seem to come from, you're just channeling the ideas. It's kind of a corny thing, but people often talk about how they're just transcribing, or they're just scribing down what they are hearing or what they're thinking is coming through them. And I think you have to be in quite a practiced place to get to that, but also quite a, the only thing I can think to say is like high frequency place. So I definitely think you need to be in that place. And like I say, if you're in ego, if you're in jealousy, if you're in a place of envying somebody else who's creating some work, you're not going to be able to, I don't personally feel from my experience that you'll be able to get to that place where you can go, oh my God, that's an amazing idea, I've got to do that, without taking any personal egoic credit for it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think in my experience with everything I've created, things that have actually come out looking like nothing I expected, or things that got the responses that I wasn't expecting, were usually those that I went in with no attachment, no sort of, oh, there's an agenda to this, right? And it's tough. It's tough for us here on this planet to get to that space. It does take practice, like you say. But a lot of times when we are freely, creatively expressing ourselves, without the egoic chatter, without the agenda attached, without the desire to be recognized for it, that's when that recognition comes. Hmm. And it doesn't happen all the time, right? And part of that not happening all the time is really a good lesson in non-attachment, as well as the topic we're talking about today, which is the destination is not the end really, mm-hmm. right? Is that even in situations where you're getting the response that is overwhelmingly positive, right? What does that do for you? You don't, right? Most of the time you don't stop there. You don't say, okay, oh, we reached our peak, we're done, right? You keep going.
You do. You do. You absolutely do keep going. I think the thing with creativity is it's always, it almost sounds negative when you put it this way, but it's like, okay, I've done this piece of work, I liked it, but on to the next one. I've done this piece of work, on to the next one, which almost sounds kind of like the opposite of what people talk about when they speak about mindfulness or being in the present, because you're in the present, but you do have one eye on what's next. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. I think that's actually to be expected with creativity, because otherwise you are focused too much on the destination rather than the journey. If you go, my destination is, and I've certainly done this, my destination is to release this song or album and people will hear it and then I'll be on a record label, you know, or people will leave me nice comments and thumbs up. And it's like, of course, that's a nice thing to have people go, hey, this is great, man, this is really good. And then, you know, for some kind of success to come from that is a great thing. But it's like you say, you don't really stop there. I liked what you said there. You don't stop there. You just pass it by, because if you want to keep on creating better and better work, which ironically is a byproduct, will actually be received quite well by people, generally speaking, you need to keep in that creative space as opposed to the space of caring what people say and what they comment and all that, and the success, like you say. So yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And the idea of creating goals is great. But I think the understanding of what goals are is what really gets a lot of people off track. Like, most people create a goal to think that's going to be an achievement on top of which they could feel like, okay, this is it. I've reached that goal, right? But I think if we changed our perception towards goals as mile markers on a journey that, I mean, the end is nowhere near in sight, then we can start to say, all right, once I reach this, this is what I'll do next, this is what I'll do next, and this is what I'll do next, and this is what I'll do next. And it also changes our language. We won't say things like, well, if only I got X, Y, and Z to happen, then I will feel a certain way. Because the truth is, you could get X, Y, and Z to happen, and you will feel only a certain way temporarily. And soon enough, you'll have to create a new X, Y, and Z. And so we could literally change the language to say, oh, okay, once I get X, Y, and Z, then I know what I'll do next. Or then at that point, or from that space, I know what I'll do next. And it's not from that point or that space, I'm going to feel a certain way, as in either good or bad, or feel satisfied or feel accomplished, right? And in creating music, I see that a lot. Or as an artist, I see that a lot, where you would create content and you would post it, but then at that point you could be really focused on, say, I want to go and do the marketing piece, and you say, all right, we're going to market and we're going to reach these goals, but it's not the end. After that, you're like, all right, I got to go back and maybe make some more music, but take it into a different direction, or the same genre, but switch it up a little bit, right? And at the beginning of our conversation, you said something along those lines where you were really like motivated by learning to take people's music and then coming up with something fresh that was similar to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think the idea of replicating genres played a big part, and it still does, but played a very, very big part in my development creatively when I was a teenager, because it's like, looking back now, you kind of realize, oh, I was just like, my brain was learning. My brain was learning, how do guitars go together on a Rolling Stones record? How do harmonies go together on a Beach Boys record? Like, and you just, the only way to learn that is by trying it yourself. So yeah, I think going into those avenues is interesting. But you were talking as well about the kind of thought that keeps coming to my mind is what you were saying about the destination and the journey. You know, as I've told you before, I'm quite an avid meditator, as you are. Mm-hmm. And I think it, not only meditating, but the kind of narrative around meditation, you know, because once you get into that that realm of thought, you kind of start to read a lot of stuff about Tao and Zen and Buddhism and that sort of thing. And one of the overarching themes in that is that if you have the destination, like you said, of X, Y, and Z, then when you reach them, you quite quickly realize, after a few times of really going, I want X, Y, and Z, you get them, you realize that there's an X, Y, and Z over here. So you kind of realize, like you said, they're just mile markers. There's nothing wrong with having goals. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing. When I first started meditating and stuff, I used to think, I should never have a goal again in my life. And And you realize, I am a human being, though, and I do have desires and stuff. So as long as you're not identified 100%, and God, you know, it's hard not to be identified with things. But if you're not identified 100% with your goals, then you're able to have this kind of space where you are observing yourself having goals. And in that space, a creativity and an actual activity can emerge, which I think is kind of the goal that we all have. I don't think everyone cultivates it in the same way, but I think we're all aiming for it. Of, if I want to make music, the only time to make music is now, today, you know? Mm-hmm. It can't be 100% focused on, in 6 months I want to have this. I want to have, you know, £10,000 or dollars to make my next album. It has to be today. I've got this song I'm working on today. I'm adding bass guitar to it today. And with meditation, you know, that's the big teacher and the great leveler that meditation is. I find is that, rather than going, God, if I keep meditating like this, I'm going to be so happy soon. It's it's got to be now. It's got to be, maybe you're not 100% happy, but there's got to be something now, because this moment, you and I talking right now, this is it. That's the whole of life.
Yeah.
And if you can be content, or at least calm in yourself in those moments, I think you stand a better chance of not only being happy, but creative and productive, and also, like you were saying earlier, ironically, all those goals that you have will probably materialize easier than if you were focused on them being in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever it is. So,
yeah, you know, a lot of what you say resonates with me, and one thing if I can add on that is the whole idea that everything, regardless of what we're doing or who we are, is spiritual in a sense. It's the formless expressing itself in some form, and we experience that here in the physical world, all right, through sound, light, music, dancing, etc. Now, as I have come to learn, particularly more so after my, you know, spiritual awakening experience, is that all what we're doing, whether we're setting goals or not, it's actually helping us realize this idea of non-attachment, which is one of the many ideas that self-realization sort of brings upon oneself. And that is, with everything you create, be non-attached to it. In that, don't be so gung-ho on the outcome that you envision for yourself. And that's really important, because the attachments usually are going to disappoint you somehow, or even if they don't, they're only going to make you feel elated or happy for just a short period of time. And what I mean by that is through music and creating songs regularly, nothing wrong with that. But if you're really into it, as in you focus so much on creating the best music, the best music, the best music, the best music, at some point, you're going to realize that you have reached a peak of creating such great music that if you're not attached to it, turns out to be even like a spiritually enlightenment experience, which was the same with me in my meditation. I was so gung-ho on trying to attain a certain level of meditating that eventually I had a spiritual awakening through it. Yes, the even more fascinating part is after you have that awakening, or after you have that spiritual transformative experience through any avenue of creative expression that you're involved in, if you're still here on earth, you realize that you almost have to start all over again in a different avenue. But at this point now, you're taking with you all those lessons that you, right, you learned through the journey. And all of this is very representative of what I understand consciousness or everything that we come from to be. It continuously seeks to know itself infinitely. And because it's trying to do that, right, there's really no end to how it can express itself. And so every time you get to a place where you feel like, whoa, I've reached the end, it's just another beginning, right? It's always just another beginning. But now it's a beginning on, and you're going to love this as a musician, on a higher octave, right? It's it's a beginning on a higher octave. It's a beginning with more knowledge. And we see this dispersed throughout life. Even as a student in school, if you go to nursery school, then you go to primary school, then you graduate, then you go to maybe the university, you graduate from that, it's always a beginning. After you've gotten your diploma, it's, oh, I need my first job. And then you start your first job, it's your beginning. Then you quit, then you go to a new job. Oh, it's a beginning. If you're a freelancer, a client comes to you and says, help me do this. And then you do it and you're done. And all of a sudden, oh, I've ended and I have to start again. And it never ends. And everything we're doing. And I love you for this because you really embody this with your work. Is you know, you have an album, you release it, and then you know, I got some more juices flowing. I got to go back in the studio and record, right? Everything we're doing, you know, what I was just trying to say, is representative of what I call consciousness, of who God is. It's this endless being.
I agree. And I think I mentioned this to you when we had a call the other day. But Sadhguru, the Indian owner of the Isha Center, he says, he said this thing the other day, which I absolutely loved. He said, desire is no different from life. They're the same thing. And that expansion of consciousness, which you talk about, I think is quite represented in this. He said that we desire not because we want more, but because we want all. And because if you wanted more, you could get it. If you said, I want this house, I want this Lamborghini car, and I want to be married to this woman, you could go do 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 and you can get them, and then you'd feel absolutely perfect. But that's not the case, because you get there, and like you say, once you finish college, you want to get yourself a job. Mm-hmm. Once you're in the job, I'm not even talking about materialistically of like promotion in that sense, but there is always a new place to go. There's never an end.
Nope.
There are cycles, I think. There are loops and cycles in what we want, which I think we can be aware of, but I agree with all you say. I think we constantly want to, oh no, that's what I was going to say, is we constantly want to create something because there is that constant desire in us to keep on expanding and expanding, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if I could be as bold to say why I think creativity is working well for me this year, I think I was just kind of reflecting on it, is I have brought to fruition every idea I've had, basically. So it's like, I have a small sketchy idea like I was talking about earlier, and I'll develop it and, you know, release it at some point. So I think whatever the creative juices are, they have a tendency, if you don't work on your ideas, because you're kind of given these ideas, you know, like, I've got this great idea, And then if you don't act on it, it kind of becomes stagnant and stale. And then you have, it kind of builds up and you get this storehouse of like these stale ideas you didn't do anything with. But if you go, okay, because my warehouse is clean at the moment, yep. You know, and it's the first time I've been able to say that, but I have something come in, I load it up, you know, that's a new idea, work on it, develop it and send it out the outdoor so that something new can come in the indoor next week. And I can't think of any analogy that isn't like, you know,
you're not
smooth working like bowel or something. But
you're not a hoarder. No, I love it. I love it. Yeah. That's the idea of non-attachment, right? And okay, that was really perfect. In that your storehouse of creative potential that you can express is always ready for more. I'm not attached to what comes in. And so as soon as it comes in, I package it up and send it out, right? And that creates more space for you to get more information. And you can even go into like some really crazy ideas as consciousness sees you as an avenue through which it can express itself. Then it says, what more can I give you? Right. When I know, imagine if you have a business and you know, an employee is really good at producing what you have for ideas. All right. I need us to capture this or something like that. Can you produce this for me? If they do it, and you see that they're really proficient at creating or bringing to fruition your ideas, you end up giving them more responsibility.
Mm.
Right? And so that's how I think consciousness works, or that's how I think consciousness is working for you too, especially at this time, is Roger isn't holding on to ideas. He isn't afraid to express himself. He's not letting his ego say, whoa, this song idea sounds crazy. I'm not going to release it because it's not going to get this. You're like, nah, this was a spark of creative juice genius that has come to me. Let me try to bring that into physical manifestation any which way I can. And when then consciousness sees that that's an individual who's doing this, whoa, the creative juices keep coming. And I would almost say I relate as well. I mean, when I had all this information about writing the book, I was like, I'm going to write a book. Now, everyone, I tried to talk myself out of it as someone who has never written a book, as someone whose sister said, okay, you're writing shit. But I didn't stop. You just keep going. And now I have this book. It's getting great reviews. People are reading it and they're excited. It's challenging to your thought patterns and your beliefs. And the book is out now. And I could go and dwell. I mean, you could spend 6 years trying to perfect the book, but at some point, like you said, you just have to release. And when you do, it creates avenue for more stuff to come up. Like my podcast is, these are all basically, I don't want to say the word would be, these are all children of my meditating practice from over 5-6 years ago. Right, these are all outcomes. And I had no idea I would ever meet Roger Hellers and have a podcast with him when I started meditating. It was a need at that point in time that I was, you know, acting upon that has led to this. I love this idea of not having stale creative juices just sitting there. So if you have an idea, put it out. Don't be worried about the response. Be non-attached to the outcome. Yes, you can have goals, but even then, recognize what goals are. They're mile markers. They're not the end. And no destination of anything is the end. It's just always another beginning. Yeah. No, I love that you said that. It's so beautiful. Yeah, it's so beautiful.
I was just going to say, it's a very, it's an interesting notion. It's one I play with from time to time as a thought, but I think it hasn't kind of come to my mind until right now, hearing what you just said, reflecting on, you have creative ideas in your storehouse, they come in, and then if you don't express them, they pile up, and then you have stale creative energy, let's say. But I mean, if we think about how much that goes with the rest of our lives as well, not just creatively. And it's almost like when people talk about being on a high frequency of life, you could take that very literally as how in the now are you, and how, what am I trying to say? How in the now are you, and how much are you holding on to things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how much have we done this in the past where somebody will say something to me or somebody will say something to you and you'll hold on to it for 3 months? You're holding that thing in your storehouse, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very difficult because we're human beings and we become identified and attached with things so, so easily. But if we can at least have some distance where we can go, okay, this is coming into my life today and I'm going to deal with it appropriately now. You know, whether it's a creative idea, I've got this idea for a song, I'm not going to stress about it. I'm just going to create a very basic sketch. It doesn't have to be perfect, you know, just a basic sketch. Or if somebody makes some plans with me and I'm nervous about them, I'm not going to ruminate and stew on that, or I'm going to try not to. It's hard to do, but I'm going to try not to so that it doesn't build up and become this monster and make a mountain out of a molehill, but instead just kind of do things moment by moment by moment. You know, and I think that's, if you can be in that place, then you have, I don't know, it sounds a bit heavy and cheesy, but you kind of arrived in reality. If you can get to a point where this is it. And, you know, there's no, oh no, what about tomorrow? Oh no, how am I going to do this? Because all of that is just building up, or well, not even building up, but maybe even like wasting energy.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of, we all know that's our goal, is to get to a point where we can just like, take in life and take it out and, you know, express straight away. But we get caught up very quickly, and it's a question of how do we overcome that? I think that's the interesting one for me. It's like, how do we overcome becoming attached and holding on to stuff too much?
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I like that you're even bringing in the whole idea of personal self-care in this sense, letting go of emotional pain that we may have experienced at some point in our past.
Definitely. I mean, because we all have that stuff. I mean, you know, it can be referred to as karma, I suppose. Especially if you look at it objectively of, okay, if I look at my past, this seems to have happened. I have this problem with intimacy. I have this problem with anxiety around unknown situations. And rather than going, oh no, what am I going to do? I have this anxiety. If you can go, I seem to have these three cards on my table. That seems to be the way I was born into this world. I was born with these three cards, which I'm going to have to play at some point. They're the cards in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, just by not identifying quite so much with those cards, you're able to kind of make better choices, I think. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head here.
Yeah, no, I totally relate. And you know, this whole idea of non-attachment, I've seen it in basically so many different cultures. I visited Shanghai, China one time, and the business sector in the country had this belief of not hoarding funds, of not hoarding capital that comes into the business. And it was kind of represented by a creature, I think it was a dragon, whose mouth was open and whose back end, whose rear end was also open. And the whole idea was for energy to always be flowing through, not hoarding anything. And that's how it was able to maintain its status as a surviving business. It wasn't saying, oh, money has come in, I got to hold on to it, right? And you say, well, if you hold on to it, you're not creating space for new money to come in, essentially. And I remember it was this nice little statue where both ends of it were open. It was just like a dragon with his mouth open and its butt just wide open as well. And to allow kind of like a metaphor for don't hold on. Energy always has to be moving. And if you hear a lot of spiritual teachers speak, they say, you know, emotion is energy in motion. Don't hold on to it. Creativity is also energy being moved somehow and looking for an outlet to be expressed. And then when you hold on to it, you're stagnating this thing that really wants to get out. You're preventing yourself from getting new ideas. And then you're kind of thinking that by holding on to it, it's going to work out for you better, but not necessarily. Don't be attached.
Hmm.
There's really a big lesson in non-attachment when we're talking about the destination not being the end. Yeah.
Oh, it just made me think of something a thought that crosses my mind from time to time, which is the idea of striking while the iron's hot, you know, like a blacksmith would.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have it so the metal you're working with as a blacksmith is, you know, white hot, so you can shape it, you know, and actually kind of create something from it. So that's like a creative idea. If you have something come to mind and you leave it for 5 weeks, then it's not going to be hot anymore. So you kind of got to iron it out, even imperfectly, to where it's a shape so that it doesn't become stagnant. So it's interesting that it has to be, you have to be in that state of flow or creativity, or in the zone, as people say. So,
yeah, no, I love it. And speaking of literally having ideas and making sure we put them out, expressing them, you had an amazing idea. You shared with me about 2 months ago, which was, no, maybe a month and a half ago, which was you coming as a guest host on Conversations with Roland. And then, actually, I'll let you share it. It was your idea, so go ahead.
Okay, sure. Well, okay, so I was listening to the show, and the bits that always stand out to me of your show are the parts where you talk about your personal experience and your sort of authenticity with your journey with meditation and just your life story, really. I've always found those parts to be the most resonant for me. So I was thinking it would be great if the table was turned to every now and then, to a certain extent, to where rather than you having guests on, as well as you having guests on, some episodes where the tables are turned and somebody says to you, so what did that mean to you? You know, what was the next step in your meditation process after that? What have you found to be, you know, truths in your life, so to speak? So I thought that as you and I seem to have quite a good rapport, I could, you know, every now and then ask you some questions about yourself and make that hopefully kind of a different side or show a different facet of you, you know?
Yes. And I loved it. I mean, I had talked with a couple of friends about that idea, about hosting a podcast too. And one idea that came out was, you know, Roland, when you are trying to actually put out a message as a podcast host, you end up being sort of drowned out by your guests, and the message that they have to, you know, say is you have to make sure that you're not lost in the weeds as having a voice or having something to contribute to the topics of discussion that you have. And, you know, but again, the idea of having a podcast came to me and I wanted to put that out. And so that's what we're doing, right? I didn't want to hold on to it and say, nah, I'm not going to do this because I'm afraid to get drowned out. But little did I know that, you know, 4 months, 5 months after starting the podcast, you who I've been working with to help me edit would now say, Roland, let me give you an opportunity to express your voice on your own podcast in this kind of manner. And I loved it. I loved the idea. And if you're listening, it's something we're going to do in the future. I mean, we just spent a whole hour talking about the destination is not the end, talking about not holding on to creative sparks of ideas that come into our minds. And so this would be one for sure where we have to live out what we're preaching to the world, right? We have this idea, so we better do it. If not, we're just going to be imposters. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. I'm certainly looking forward to being a guest on my own podcast and for having like a new host. And I think you'd be great, Roger. I think you'd be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I am too. I mean, I think I said to you at the time, I was kind of nervous about saying, hey, maybe I could ask you questions, because it almost feels rude or changing the format or something. But it kind of came, you know, like a lot of creative ideas do. It kind of came as a lightning bolt, like, I've got to ask Roland. It just seemed like an appropriate thing to ask, you know? So I'm looking forward to it too.
Yeah. And I love that about you, right? You said you don't know why things are working for you so well this year. And it's 2020 when everything seems to be falling apart, right? Here comes out Roger. He's putting out music after music. He's having all these creative juices. And a big part, I believe, is because you're not holding on to those ideas. You're actually expressing them. And that's inspiring, man. I love it.
Thanks. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, I do. Guys, listen, if you're still listening, which I know you are, you should connect with Roger Heathers. I'm going to have links to his podcast and his Instagram page in the notes section of this podcast that you're listening to. And then also his website, rogerheathers.com. Like, I'm not kidding. This guy's got all kinds of albums and they're really great. He's got amazing songs. One of my favorite is Been There, but Been There, Done That, But the T-shirt or something. I forget. What's the title again?
It's called... Well, can we say curse words on the show?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't name this one. I'm not a big swearer in my lyrics, but one of the collaborators I work with, George, called "Fuck That, I've Been There, Got the T-Shirt."
Yeah. It's a sweet song. I think it's, I should have a, I think I put a link to that here too. It's one of my favorite. The vocals are, man, I listened to that. I was so excited. It's an amazing song.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah. I think it's on YouTube. Where is it? Tell us where we can get
okay,
this.
Okay, well, pretty much everything I do is either on YouTube, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Music. I kind of tried it. Bandcamp is a good one. I would just try to put it everywhere so it's just available. So
it's available.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my friend, thank you so much for coming on. You're really amazing, and I look forward to having more conversations with you where I'll be on the hot seat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Again, connect with Roger, rogerheathers.com. And with me, you know how to find me, rolandachenjiang.com on Instagram and Facebook at rolandachenjiang. Don't forget to get your copy of Who and Why You Are. The audiobook is out now as well. And I think there's a sale going on Amazon with the book, actually. I think they discounted the price. So kudos to Amazon. It must be getting some traction. So that's good for them to discount it. So, yeah, thank you. Roger, please enjoy the rest of your day, and until we chat again.
Thanks very much, Roland. It's a pleasure.
Likewise.